He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What is good, everybody? Welcome into the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphreys, Taylor Williams with you tonight. No Woody tonight. Woody's in Vegas, so we'll have to get some good stories from Woody from his time in Vegas next week on the RBC Recap Show, where we also will have to get Woody's thoughts on the Masters from last week. Speaking of the Masters from last week, if you want all of our recaps, we posted them on the podcast. So the 73rd Hole radio shows last weekend doubled as the 73rd Hole podcast. So if you want to hear the recaps with Craig Humphreys live from Augusta and all of our things right after Scotty finished out on 18, definitely go back to Sunday's show and listen to that. It was a bunch of great stuff. Today, we're going to re-update you guys on college golf. We have the Big 12 championships coming up next week. We're going to update you on the Big 12 teams, how OU and OSU are doing later on in the show. We're also going to do our RBC Heritage preview show. And then we also need to talk about Rory McIlroy. And that's what we're going to talk about right now, because T-Dub, Rory was in the news for about 24 hours here. There was rumors from City AM, which is London's most read financial paper, that reported that Rory McIlroy could be close to joining LIV Golf for, get this, $850 million. Now, Rory, since then, today, he told Todd Lewis out at Hilton Head, he said that he had never been offered a contract by LIV Golf and will spend the rest of his career on the PGA Tour, officially putting to bed the rumors of him joining LIV Golf for $850 million. Now, I think that Rory's telling the truth, that he's not going to LIV. I do know for a fact, I can't tell my sources, T-Dub, but I do know for a fact that LIV has contacted pretty much everybody in the top 50 after this Masters week. I just, trust me on this, LIV is reaching out to a bunch of PGA Tour players, offering them contracts. Now, I don't think that Rory would ever go to LIV, but let's live in a fantasy land here, pardon the pun, that Rory did go to LIV for $850 million. Here's why it might make sense, and listen, he shut this down, so this is all hypothetical, but we've seen guys say, I'm not going, and then go after the fact anyways, so let's just play along here for a second. If Rory McIlroy went to LIV for $850 million, in my opinion, that would tip the scales even more than a guy like Scottie Scheffler. Getting the PGA Tour's guy from last year, who was the biggest voice in favor of what Jay Monahan and the SSG group, what the TGL, all of that, what the PGA Tour is doing, their guy, if he were to go to LIV, T-Dub, that, in my opinion, would force the issue and make LIV and the PGA Tour merge together. And by the way, it would be on LIV's terms. Now, if Rory went, the reason why I think he would go in this situation, hypothetical obviously, would be because he knows when he goes, they're going to merge back to the PGA Tour. Everyone's going to be playing together again, and he's going to get $850 million on top of that. So listen, Rory McIlroy might not go, but someone else, maybe like a Victor Hovland, someone like that, might say, hey, if I go, it might tip the scales a little bit and come this much closer to everyone getting back together, and then I get, you know, a few hundred million on top of that just for saying, hey, I'm going here, and then we merge back together. It's like I never left in the first place. That kind of makes sense to me, T-Dub, but Rory shot it down. I have no reason to believe he's going to LIV, but at the same time, it's pretty interesting that a very reputable publication, City AM, would report on something like that.
Well, here we are, Sam, the week after the Masters, where everything just seems flat, seems crazy, just seems like, oh, we just had the best week of the entire year. Now we have to wait how many, we have to wait 363 more days now till next week's or till next year's Masters. But here we are with what seemed to be some interesting news, as you alluded to, come out. There have been rumblings before of Rory potentially doing this way back beforehand. He shot him down again. And he did the same thing this time. Obviously, the amount of money you see there would make you think, how in the hell could you ever possibly turn that down, no matter how much money that you already have in your bank account. So it's fairly interesting that this timing of everything is when it comes out, the week after the Masters, when he's been playing like shit for him all year. Let's just call it how it's been. And so it seems like they were trying to find a reason why Rory has been playing bad, and this would obviously be a good one because they think that he's been focusing his mind elsewhere on other things. So, but no, even when it came out, I didn't think it was true. It was, if that had happened, I would officially know that we were in the parallel universe, and I would be worried that the apocalypse was coming in whatever way, the great flood, a comet about to strike us down, a black hole immersing the sun, whatever it may be. I would fear for my life if that happened, because 2024 has already been a weird year, and that would have been the ultimate wrench in the chaos that has been the world of golf the last 2 years.
I will say this. I mean, I feel like LIV and the PGA Tour are going to continue to exist as separate entities until someone like a Rory McIlroy goes to LIV and tips the scales in LIV's favor. Don't you agree?
Well, I just think that right now it's just a tug of war game. But people want, I don't think there's as many things that people think about that they're still dealing with. And what I mean by that is that I think that when you encompass all the intricacies that would be this merger, I think they have a decent amount of them figured out. I think there's a few loose ends that they still need to tie, and those things can take a while just because you have a decent amount of it figured out. And who knows what that decent amount be? Do I think it's more than, you know, 50-60%? I would say probably somewhere around there. That's just rough guesstimate, and that's including literally everything you need to do. People do not understand the logistics behind something like this occurring when you're dealing with billions of dollars. So when you look at it from that perspective, they only have a little bit to go. But the very last bit, Sam, is what can take the longest, because really no side is in no particular hurry. LIV has more, and the Saudis have more money than anyone could dream of. And the PGA Tour, even though they're obviously looking for it a little bit more, but they just had the merger with the SSG company or whatever it's called, the backing with $3 billion coming into the game. So that'll help them survive for at least a little bit. So it's at this point, they're going to take their time trying to get the rest of this whole thing figured out. But if something like that did occur, or like you're saying, maybe if there's a few more top 50 players that do want to go over, that could definitely speed up the process for sure.
All I know is I got a text today out of the blue that just said they're calling everybody, you know? And so in my opinion, that means that the merger between LIV and the PGA Tour, although the discussions in the Bahamas might've been productive, or what, that's what they're at least saying in the media, if LIV is still trying to get PGA Tour players and poach PGA Tour players, the discussions aren't that close, or they're looking to, you know, exist as separate entities going into the future, and maybe LIV goes to 72 holes and does get official world golf ranking points, and that's how they're going to, you know, fix all the problems in the future instead of just taking the top 10 guys off LIV and putting them in major championships and letting the LIV guys play in the signature events on the PGA Tour. We might not be getting that T-dub, considering the fact that LIV is still obviously trying to poach PGA Tour players.
You just need to think of it as a game of chess, right? You're just trying to get the other pieces from your opponent without losing any of yours. And at this point, if you can, because like you said, the deal's not done, but at the same time, even if it is however close it is that you want to debate on that, if you can take a piece, and a very important piece at that, if you're getting top elite players from the other side over them and get them off the board, then that is a tremendous thing to do. And whenever you have unlimited amounts of money to essentially try to buy the game of golf, that's what they're looking at it as. They're not looking at these guys as individual players. They're looking at them as, what would this be to get us closer to literally every continent in the world viewing, or the Saudis being back golf by that, is essentially where I think that they want to be. So at that point, they want to get that done faster than not. And if they can take another player for a little bit of money to them, why not do it?
Well, as far as reality, the rumors were that Rory was offered a $850 million deal from Liv, and Rory says that that offer was never on his table and that he will be playing on the PGA Tour for the rest of his career. I just wonder if somehow in 2025, Rory was getting paid guaranteed money by the PIF, and there's some sort of merger, and it is called the PGA Tour, so maybe there's a little bit of truth to both sides, and it's a little bit of semantics from Rory. Maybe I'm reading too far into this. I just wonder, maybe someone made these rumors up completely out of the blue because it's Masters Week, and reporters who don't normally care about golf are trying to make headlines, right? And so there's probably nothing to this, but thinking that there could be something to this is kind of fun to talk about on a podcast.
Like I said earlier, had it happened, it would have literally, the world would have flipped upside down. It would have been insane what would have happened. But like you said, it's fun to think about, fun to hypothesize what may have occurred. But I don't think it's the world that we live in. Now, may there be someone else not too far down the line, or maybe at the end of this year. I think the possibility of that is fairly high. But as far as Rory McIlroy, I think it's a literal fantasy land.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, definite fantasy land. But what is reality, T-Dub, and kind of to wrap up this conversation, is the fact that Rory has done a complete 180 on his views on Liv and the PIF, and obviously has kept his name out of the controversy so far this year. I don't know whether the 180 was to focus solely on golf this year and keep out of the controversy, or if he has had conversations with Yasser and actually those conversations have gone well. I don't know, but what I do know is his rhetoric towards Liv, and maybe some of it has to do with his good friend John Rahm going to Liv, but his rhetoric towards Liv has not been near as hateful as it was in the past, with lack of a better term, T-Dub.
Yes, most definitely. I think that, you know, at the end of the day for Rory, you have to, I thought that with everything that he tried to give up this year with responsibility-wise off the course, that his game would have improved, and that just hasn't been the case. So you look at how he's done on the PGA Tour since he played over in Dubai earlier this year. He finished third at the Valero Texas Open, but other than that, his best finish is tied for 19th. He has a lot of finishes there from 19th to 24th, I believe. Yeah, so he's very consistent there as being slightly above middle of the pack in a lot of these tournaments. So that's just not what you expect from a player of Rory's caliber. So it's someone who I was a longtime fan of Rory's ever since, even right as soon as he turned pro when he was 17 years old. I was a fan of his. And within the last year, with things that he's said, I've obviously not rooted for him as much as I did. But he's someone who's so extremely talented, and he needs to be playing a lot better than he is right now. I think it would be good for the game if he starts playing a lot better, because Scottie Scheffler needs someone to try and challenge him, because if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to run away with this tour. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that Scotty is a polarizing enough figure to captivate a lot of fans to want to engage in him. Obviously, nowhere close to Tiger, but I feel like Rory has the talent to compete at that level. And the PGA Tour 100% needs it, but I think the game of golf needs him to start at least contending in these majors again and eventually, hopefully, win a fifth.
No doubt about it. The game of golf is always better with Rory McIlroy playing good golf, and I think it's coming. I like the changes that he's made with Butch Harmon, and Rory is in action this week at the RBC Heritage at the signature event on the PGA Tour. We are going to hit a break. After the break, we're going to talk about the RBC Heritage coming up, and it's very, very interesting. I'll just give you a spoiler alert. Rory McIlroy is not in the top six favorites this week at the RBC Heritage. We'll tell you why coming up after the break here on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast.
Hey everyone, T-Dub here. I want to take a second to tell you about my good friends at McRae Roofing. Not too long ago, my roof was in desperate need of repair. There was extensive hail damage and I had many leaks that needed attention. Not only did Jeff and his staff build me a new roof, but they walked me through step-by-step of the claims process, which is something that I was very, very concerned about. Everything from the initial inspection of the roof to analyze all the damage to meeting with the insurance adjuster to make sure they were aware of every damaged area, making sure my claim was accurate. Their custom copper creations are truly beautiful and add a great touch to any roof. Not only do they do residential roofs, but they have an elite list of commercial customers, including Gallardia Country Club, Oak Tree National, and Bass Pro Shops. Check out their website at McCrayRoofing.com to view some of their work yourself, and give them a call at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000.
We'd like to welcome in our newest sponsor for the 24 season, Allcom Security. They're located in Midwest City. It's an Oklahoma-based company by Oklahomans. If you have any alarm needs, whether it's home or business, or what they have now that I am fascinated by, and I think you would be too, they're OKC security trailers. These trailers aren't just your average surveillance units. They're equipped with cutting-edge technology that can distinguish between humans and vehicles. Imagine that. With precise accuracy, these trailers detect any unwanted activity on your property, whether it's a person wandering where they shouldn't be or a vehicle creeping around after hours. It's like having a vigilant guardian watching over your domain. I have personally seen these units, and they are amazing. So if you have any alarm need, please call my good friends at Allcom Security, 405-732-9000, or just look them up on the web, Allcom Security.
And we are back here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. If you're listening to this podcast when we drop it on Tuesday night, don't forget to listen to our 73rd Hole radio show every Wednesday night on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. T-Dub has other obligations tomorrow night, so I will be joined one last time after Masters Week by the Humpman. The Humpman's going to fill in for Mr. T-Dub, so that should be a great show coming up tomorrow night on the Sports Animal. T-Dub, it is a signature event week on the PGA Tour, the RBC Heritage, a tournament we've seen for many years, one of the shorter courses, smallest greens on the PGA Tour. You got Matthew Fitzpatrick, the defending champion, who beat Jordan Spieth in the playoff last year. Let's start with this before we get to the golf course, then the players. I just hate the fact that the schedule has the week after the Masters as a signature event. I think it does a disservice to a tournament that does have some history to it, like the RBC Heritage, that some of these players who played last week at Augusta National, just by human nature, aren't going to care as much.
I couldn't agree more, Sam. Obviously, before they went to the point of it being the signature event type of schedule, the RBC was always the week after the Masters. That's how it's been for numerous years now. And whenever they RBC wanted the signature event, so here it is. So they get it. So it's good for them. They get a lot of the best players in the game. But yes, it's one of those things to where you're not going to move their place where they've historically been on the schedule to have the better players. So it is at the detriment to the players. They're getting lots of money to do it. So, and I don't believe there's a cut at this signature event. So there's some guaranteed money involved, so congratulations to them. So that kind of eases the wound slightly, but I couldn't agree more. I don't like the fact that you want to try to have the signature event the week after the Masters. I don't like trying to do it before the Masters, the week before a major. And I say the same thing about LIV, too. I don't like LIV tournaments being the week before, the week after majors. And it's just one of those things where I think that it's one of those. Whenever you're looking at the week after a major, especially what all these guys have been through, just being completely gassed and the emotions that it takes to play 72 holes at Augusta National. Now, some of these guys missed the cut that are playing, and there's a few that didn't play as well. But the main ones that you want to contend and the focal points that everyone's eyeballs want to see on the leaderboard Sunday afternoon, at least grinded through what was some very harsh and a very tough course at Augusta National. So yes, they will be tired. They're going to be a little bit drained sometimes. And it's fairly interesting that Scottie Scheffler is in the field currently with his baby due. I thought that he would not play this event. So that is halfway interesting to see. And if he plays anywhere close like he has all this year, he'll probably dominate this course.
Well, Scottie Scheffler is your analytical favorite this week, has a 17.5% chance to win the golf tournament. Xander Schauffele is second, Ludvig Åberg is third, Morikawa fourth, Tommy Fleetwood fifth, and Siwoo Kim is sixth, Rory McIlroy seventh. This is one of those weeks where I feel like analytics can hurt you if you're trying to bet on this golf tournament, T-Dub, because the analytics say that, yes, Scottie Scheffler does have a 17.5% chance to win. He's obviously the best ball striker in the field. We saw that last week at Augusta. We saw that at Bay Hill. We saw that at the Players. But coming the week after an emotional roller coaster of winning your second major championship, I mean, especially the guys that are in contention on Sunday, that's just a lot of mental fortitude that you have to give the week before, and it just doesn't necessarily correlate to playing good golf the next week. And so if I had to bet on this golf tournament, there's no way I'm picking Scottie Scheffler or honestly Morikawa or Åberg, just because I think they might be a little bit mentally drained after, you know, being in contention on Sunday at Augusta National. And that's one of the reasons why I don't like that this is a signature event the week after the Masters. And it's ironic because you look at the payout too this week, $3.6 million to the winner. That's literally the same payout as Augusta National was last week. So we live in a world where the week after Augusta, you get paid just as much as you do at Augusta, T-Dub. It's just a weird world that we live in the game of golf right now.
Oh, 100%. And for example, whenever we talk about the predictions of how much chance they have to win, finish top five, top 10, make the cut, however you want to look at it. Here's what they go off of. This is how the model is based. You have the baseline, which is just how good the player is and how good they've been playing. Then you have the course history, how well they played this course in the past. Then you have course fit, which is how their skills would translate to what has historically been what has succeeded at the course. What you don't see there is mental endurance. You don't see how are things going off the course? How do you have, you know, is a baby coming, like for Scottie Scheffler? That's not calculated into the percentage chances in the model that is presented to us on Data Golf. So it's yes, you have to consider those things that are going on there. And I think that, you know, whenever we see like 17.5% chance, you know, we can look at that and take the knowledge that we know of what's going on and what he went through last week getting his second green jacket. But yeah, that's probably a little bit lower, especially at Harbortown, where it is a shorter golf course, so that invites the shorter hitters into it. It's not a course that you can overpower. It's actually analytically one of the shorter. For driving distance, players here have been not as successful, if that makes sense. So it greatly invites the short hitters to exceed. Well, when you see like that, that kind of opens the field to more players. So yeah, I expect it to be a little bit open. But you always ask me, Sam, I think it's the top five or the rest of the field. I would probably go ahead and say the top five just because there's so much talent there. And my one and done pick is in the top five. So hopefully that is the case.
Very good, T-Dub. Now let's dive into our picks, I guess. I'm going with the defending champion, Matthew Fitzpatrick, because obviously he likes this golf course. He won here last year, even when he was going through his little slump. But the last three tournaments, he's gained over a shot on the field on the greens per round. He's putting very, very nicely right now. And he's really playing the best golf that he's played in, honestly, since he won the U.S. Open a couple years ago. So, T-Dub, I think that Matthew Fitzpatrick is a guy who didn't necessarily contend late last week at Augusta National, but he played pretty decent last week, finished tied for 22nd. The finishes before that was tied for 10th, solo 5th place. So I really like, you know, he might not win the golf tournament, but if I'm trying to bet on somebody this week to finish top 10 or top 5 or pick someone in a one-and-done pool, I feel like Matthew Fitzpatrick's a pretty safe bet.
Well, one point that you said earlier, Sam, about the purse size of this tournament is that you have to treat this as a very big event if you're in a one-and-done pool, because the winner gets a very large amount of money. So there's a lot of things that can transpire if you have someone that plays really good and earns you a lot of cash. You can move up greatly. So that's why I'm going with someone who is in the top five, someone who has been playing very well as of recently, played very well last week at the Masters with a T3 finish. He finished seventh the week before at the Valero Texas Open. And in four appearances here, he has made three of four cuts at this course, and he has finished in the top 25 the other three times. Give me a little bit of Tommy Fleetwood, Sam. I think this is a great opportunity for him to potentially get his first win on the PGA Tour. It's, like I said, he seems to be trending
in
the right
direction. That's still mind-boggling to me, T-Dub, that he hasn't won on the PGA Tour.
I know. He was so close at the RBC. We all remember Nick Taylor's putt that he made on the last green, the bomb, but we don't remember that all Tommy Fleetwood had to do was make a birdie on the easiest par 5 that the PGA Tour has ever seen, and he was lucky to make a par, all things considered. So, yes, it is crazy. He won earlier this year in Dubai. That was when Rory hit it left in the water on 18. Rory should have won that tournament, and he did not. But one thing that's promising about Tommy is that the last 2 weeks he's gained more than a shot approach to green with his irons, and he's gaining more than half a shot off the tee, and he's also gaining more than half a shot around the greens as well. So he's got those aspects going on. His putting was really good last week at Augusta. It wasn't that good at Valero, and he still finished T7. That shows how well he's hitting it. So like to go with guys that are striking it well, especially around Harbour Town. It's a little bit shorter. You got to be precise, and I think that's a really good fit for Tommy's game.
T-Dub, one of these things is not like the other. When you're starting to read off Scheffler, Schauffele, Oberg, Morikawa, Fleetwood, Siwoo Kim, then Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Siwoo Kim really sticks out right there. I guess it's because he's one of the straighter drivers of the golf ball on the PGA Tour. He hits his irons pretty nice, but I went back and looked at his finishes at the RBC last year, missed cut after he played in the Masters the week before that last year, 42nd, 33rd, missed cut. He did finish second year, but all the way back in 2018. Am I missing something here? Why do the analytics love Siwoo Kim this week?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, because you look back at how he finished the first two times he played this course, 14th and second, you think, wow, that's very good. And then since then, five finishes, three missed cuts. His best finish was a 33rd in there. You think, wow, what is going on? But then you dive into how he's been playing lately, and in it halfway makes sense, because he hasn't missed a cut since the Shriners Open in October. He hasn't lost strokes gained off the tee since last year's Open Championship, and before that had not lost it since the Byron Nelson in May. One of the straightest driver of the ball in the game, which is really saying something. So he's been hitting his irons really good. Well, he didn't hit his irons very good at Augusta, but before that he had gained shots approach in 9 straight tournaments. And in his last 7 tournaments, he's gained shots around the greens in 6 of them. So he's a very streaky putter, really doesn't putt very good at all in a lot of tournaments, and still finishes top 15, top 20 at times. So yes, that's how well that he's hitting the ball. So I think that's why the analytics like him, because you need to be a ball striker, get around this tricky Pete Dye course. So yeah, I got Siwoo in one of my DraftKings lineups, and I highly expect him to have a great week.
If you're a Rory McIlroy fan out there and you're just waiting on the right week to pounce and say, this is the week Rory's going to figure it all out, I'm not necessarily sure that this is the week that Rory's going to figure it out, because his prior 2 finishes, you may remember that he skipped the RBC last year after the Masters, after missing the cut at the Masters, he skipped the RBC. But his previous 2 finishes here in 2020, he finished 41st, and in 2009, he finished tied for 58th. Both of those weeks, he lost shots on the greens putting. I'm just not so sure that this is the right course to say, okay, Rory's going to figure it out this week.
Well, it's, as you said, it's not the place, in my opinion, because we've been talking about this whole time. It sets up for the short, accurate players. And what is Rory? He's an absolute bomber of the ball. He overpowers golf courses, and this is not a course that you can overpower. He's going to be a lot more strategic off the course. It's going to take driver out of his hands on a lot of holes. So he is working with Butch, as you alluded to earlier. So who knows when that will click, because you have to think it'll happen at some point. So if that does, you could expect him to potentially play well at any given point. I mean, he did finish 3rd at Valero Texas Open, and if not for two of the best 4 rounds of golf that we've seen from players in the analytical era, Rory might have had a chance to win this tournament or win that tournament, which would have maybe changed our whole perspective on everything. But it's not the world that we live in, and at this point, yes, I think Rory will get it figured out. but this is, in my opinion, not the place that it will occur.
If you're trying to remember how Scotty played here last year at the RBC, he's only played the RBC one time, and it did come last year. He finished tied for 11th. Xander Schauffele at the RBC in the past. Last year, he finished solo fourth place, but before that, 64th, 63rd, 32nd. So a little bit of good, a little bit of bad from Xander on this golf course. Ludvig Åberg obviously has not played in an RBC before. Colin Morikawa has finished 31st, 22nd, 7th, and 64th. And he has never, get this, T-Dub, he has never even lost less than a half a shot per round on the greens. He absolutely hates the greens at the RBC. That's one reason I would not pick Colin Morikawa, not to mention the mental stress from last week, plus the fact that we kind of saw the iron flaws creep in on Sunday at Augusta. I want to see more from Colin before I'm picking him. I like your pick of Fleetwood. I really like Matthew Fitzpatrick this week, obviously. And one more guy to keep an eye out for would be Patrick Cantlay. He's finished third and second here the last 2 years. He did miss the cut in 21, but before that finished third, seventh, and third. So this is an absolute horse for course this week. What are your thoughts on Cantlay?
Well, Cantlay, since he was in the final group of the Genesis earlier this year, he ended up finishing tied fourth there, did not play very good in the final round at all. He shot 72 when all the other players who were up there shot in the 60s. But last week he did finish tied 22nd at the Masters and lost half a shot on the greens. So that you can look at it two ways. You can look at it and saying that, well, he just didn't like the greens at Augusta, but he's hitting the ball extremely well. He gained more than a shot approach, and he gained shots in the other two areas around the greens and off the tee. So he's going to a course that he likes, so and he's hitting the ball well. You can look at it that way. But he also lost strokes gained on the greens at the Players' Championship as well. So that's his last two tournaments. The two tournaments before that, he had gained more than a shot on the greens in those appearances. So a little bit of streakiness. The question is, will he get it figured out on the greens on a course that he's played so well in the past, but only in the 6 years that he's played here, only three of those has he gained shots on the greens. He was very streaky the other years. Has not won here, has, what is that, four finishes inside the top three, and he's gained shots off the tee pretty largely in every year that he's played. So he really knows how to maneuver around the dog legs and position the ball off the tee. So I expect Cantlay to play fairly well this week. Will he potentially get his first win on this course? I think that's a chance, but I think there's other players who have a better chance of winning.
No doubt about it. One more guy that I would stay away from this week would be Max Homa. In his two appearances at the RBC in 2023 last year and in 2020, he missed the cut and finished tied for 41st and obviously got hammered after his round on Sunday at the Masters. So I think he's one of those guys that probably would have taken this week off, but he's forced to play because it is a signature event on the PGA Tour. If you're wondering when Liv plays next, Liv will play on April 26th through the 28th in Adelaide. They're going back to Adelaide, Australia, where Taylor Gooch is the defending champion, so that's not coming up for another couple weeks. After this weekend, then it's the following weekend. We need to hit a break here on the 73rd Hole podcast. When we come back, we are going to talk college golf. We have not talked a whole lot of college golf yet this year, so we're going to update you on how the Sooners and the Cowboys are doing here on Oklahoma's leader in golf, the 73rd Hole podcast. We would like to welcome in a new sponsor to the 73rd Hole podcast, Jimmy Austin Golf Club in Norman, Oklahoma. If you have any Sooner apparel needs or apparel needs in general, this is the golf shop to go to. Jimmy Austin Golf Shop has been rated as the top merchandising facility in all of the South Central section 5 out of the last 7 years. In addition to their phenomenal pro shop, Jimmy Austin is also going to be hosting a Korn Ferry event again this year, the Compliance Solutions Championship. On June 20th through the 23rd, you can come out to Jimmy Austin and see the stars of the future on the PGA Tour competing in the Compliance Solutions Championship on the Korn Ferry Tour. I also want to encourage all of our listeners out there to go out to Jimmy Austin and play some golf. It's one of, if not the best, public facility in Oklahoma, and it always ranks in the top five best courses in Oklahoma to play golf. So if you want to play like a champion, next time you're booking your tee time, remember, there's only one Jimmy Austin Golf Club. And we are back here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphries, Taylor Williams with you, and it's time to talk some college golf. Alan Bratton and the Cowboys and Ryan Hibble and the Oklahoma Sooners are looking forward to the Big 12 Championship in Trinity, Texas, coming up on April 22nd through the 24th. So we're going to update you on how the Sooners and the Cowboys have played over these last couple weeks. It's been a busy schedule for both teams. The Sooners went to Augusta. They were in the Haskins Award Invitational, where, by the way, the Cowboys finished third in that golf tournament. Really needed that good, solid finish. We'll get to the Cowboys in a second, but we'll start with the Sooners. The Sooners finished sixth, tied for sixth in that golf tournament at six under par. That tournament had a lot of good teams. North Carolina, one of the best teams in the country, won it. Texas finished second. OSU finished third. Illinois finished fourth. You had Augusta, obviously, home tournament. They finished fifth, and then the Sooners finished tied for sixth with East Tennessee State. Then the Sooners went out to Arizona at Papago Course in Phoenix, Arizona for the Thunderbird Collegiate, where OSU finished second to Arizona State. OSU tied with UCLA. OU finished down the leaderboard. This was kind of a down tournament for the Sooners. The Sooners, I mean, they really kind of struggled in this one, T-Dub. I'm looking at the scores here. You had Drew Goodman, who shot 4-under. That's really good. You had Ben Lorenz. He shot 2-under for the golf tournament. He had a pretty decent week, but then you had guys like Jay Summey 1-over. You had Stephen Campbell Jr. 3-over, tied with Ryder Cowan. So it wasn't the greatest week for the Sooners out in Arizona with a really good field in that tournament. You know, you had Arizona State, UCLA, OSU, Arizona, Houston, but OU got beat by a bunch of average teams. You know, Baylor, SMU, New Mexico, Utah. So the Sooners, who were playing great golf to start the spring, have kind of cooled a little bit. And the Cowboys, T-Dub, update us on them. They got off to a slow start at the start of the spring, but now have kind of figured some things out. Tell us about the Cowboys.
Yeah, you alluded to their finishes earlier. Finishes third at the Haskins Award in Augusta and finishing second at the Thunderbird. Definitely trending in the right direction. They finished, before that, they had finished sixth at the Duck Invitational. They had finished third before that in San Diego. But then going all the way back to early March, they finished 13th in Cabo. They finished fifth down in Florida. So, yeah, hadn't been off to the best start. They finished eighth in Hawaii in the first tournament of the spring. So, yeah, they're definitely trending in the right direction, which is good, because it's something I allude to whenever we talk about college golf, is that the season is so long that you have to be able to time playing your best golf at the end of the year. And it looks like OSU is doing that, and OU, unfortunately, has not been doing that. What you can look at, though, for both teams is that we only have three tournaments left in the year. We have the Big 12 Championship, which is, I believe, was that next week, April 22nd through the 24th. Then we have NCAA Regionals after that. Who knows where the teams will go from there? We'll have to wait and see. You have May 13th and 15th for that. And then Nationals is May 24th through the 29th. So looking at it from a regional perspective, you have about a month to go. A lot of things can transpire whenever you're an elite college golfer, and you have to you can gain it and you can lose it overnight. It happens to the best of us. So hopefully both teams get it figured out. Last year, OSU did not make it to Nationals. If that happens again, fans may start to not be as enthused as they have been in the past, to say it lightly. So I think that is something to monitor for OSU. If they keep playing like this, though, I think there's a decent chance of them making it. And hopefully, they even potentially have a chance to make match play. That would be good for the program to do it. For sure, you look at the college rankings right now, OU is 14th and OSU is 27th. That was updated that hasn't been updated since the Thunderbird. So that would potentially move it up. So you expect OU to maybe drop a little bit, and you expect OSU to move up from their 27th finish current.
Yeah, and T-Dub, for our listeners out there who, you know, saw the national championship at Greyhawk the last 3 years, it's not at Greyhawk this year in 2024. The national championship is going to be at Omni La Costa Resort and Spa in Carlsbad, California. They've had some Q school out there in the past. It'll be interesting to see the national championship on a different course. As far as the best teams in the Big 12, you just mentioned OU and OSU. OU ranked 14th. You said OSU is ranked 27th. Texas is ranked 17th. Baylor is ranked 33rd. Mike McGraw, always rooting for him and the Baylor Bears. But the Big 12 is not quite as strong top to bottom as it has been in the past. Like, K-State's ranked 70th. Am I missing Texas Tech, T-Dub, because they play good in that? Yeah, so Texas Tech is ranked 10th.
Texas Tech is 10th.
Texas Tech is 10th, yeah. So I skipped over them. Tech is 10th, OU 14th, Texas 17th, OSU 27th, and Baylor 33rd are your top teams in the Big 12. But like T-Dub said, those rankings might change a little bit after the Thunderbird that happened this past week. As far as the best teams in the country, you got Vanderbilt, who have Gordon Sargent and Cole Sherwood. You also have North Carolina, who still has Austin Greaser. He's in his fifth year. He's ranked 30th. You got David Ford, who's ranked 17th. You also have Maxwell Ford, his brother, who's ranked 21st. They still have Dylan Minetti. I cannot believe that Dylan Minetti still has eligibility. Remember him from Pepperdine when OU lost to Pepperdine in the national championship. Minetti's ranked 58th in the country. I mean, North Carolina definitely has the star power on paper, as well as Vanderbilt. Auburn, they're ranked second in the country. They have the 11th ranked player in the country, Brendan Valdez. They also have the 5th ranked player in the country, Jackson Coyvin. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But Auburn has a really good team this year. As far as some other good teams, so it goes Vanderbilt, Auburn, North Carolina, 1, 2, 3, Arizona State, 4th, Ole Miss, 5th, FSU, 6th. Then you have Tennessee, 7th, Washington, 8th, Arizona, 9th, and Texas Tech is 10th. Any thoughts on possible favorites as we head into the national championship, T-Dub?
Yeah, I think you just have to look at those top teams for sure. Vanderbilt, North Carolina definitely stick out there. Auburn is second on the rankings I'm looking at on scoreboard. So I think you got to look at things like that. Ole Miss is 5th. I mean, so it's fairly interesting to see some names up there that aren't usual, I guess you would think, of golf powerhouses. I mean, Auburn's a fairly good program, but not something you look at as, oh my God, they're not on the same level as an OSU is for sure. So, or at least historically. So I think you got to look at those guys there for sure. As we alluded to earlier, Tech's the top team in the Big 12. OU, hopefully OU and OSU can get it figured out, make it in there and make it to match play, because once you get to the top 8 teams, literally anything can happen as long as your form gets in the right direction. So hopefully that happens, but there's a lot of golf to play, Sam. We'll just have to wait and see how it pans out.
No doubt about it. And for the Sooner and Cowboy fans wondering what some of their individual players are ranked, OU's best player by the numbers is Stephen Campbell Jr. He's ranked 65th in the country individually, and they also have Luke Kluver, who transferred from KU last year. He's ranked 67th in the country. Local favorite Ryder Callen, he's ranked 183rd in the country individually. If you're ranked, I mean, that's, you're playing really solid golf, but OU doesn't necessarily have the guy that can go out like Logan McAllister or Chris Goddard, or before that, guys like Brad Dahlke or Quade Cummins or Max McGreevy that can go out and get you a 63, 64, 65, something to really just, you know, vault that team score up the leaderboard. When we look at OSU, T-Dub, OSU's best players by the numbers are Rahon Thomas. He's ranked 72nd in the country. You also had Jonas Baumgartner, who has won. He won a tournament earlier this spring, I think, and he's ranked 133rd in the country. But like I said, they're peaking at the right time to where some of these guys, like Jonas Baumgartner or Rahan Thomas or Preston Stout, who's ranked 184th in the country. Those guys might be playing more like top 30 guys in the country the last couple weeks, finishing third and second in their last two tournaments, T-Dub.
Those rankings are a cumulative of the season. The season is very long. And as I alluded to earlier, these college kids, you're dealing with a lot of things. You got your schoolwork, you got off the course things, which we all know how those go in college. So it's, yeah, you're dealing with a lot of things going on. So your game can flip like a coin just like that. But like I said, we're going to have to wait and see how it all pans out. But I do think that at least looking how what we've seen the last couple of weeks, if OSU keeps doing what they have been doing, they will surely make it to nationals, finishing second and third the last two events in very good tournaments.
No doubt about it. T-Dub, thank you so much tonight. And thank you, by the way, to all of our listeners out there for the great engagement on all of our shows and all of our content from last week during Masters Week. I was looking at the numbers earlier, T-Dub. It's very humbling that we have so many people listening to the 73rd Hole podcast, not only in the state of Oklahoma, which we have a bunch here, but we also have a bunch of listeners around the country, and I really appreciate all the engagement. I can't tell you. I was out at Traver's Food Fair today, and I was talking to people, and people are loving listening to the golf content. Golf is only getting more and more popular year by year, and so we really thank you guys. T-Dub, any message to our listeners out there who really helped us out during Masters Week? That's who we do it for, is the listeners.
It really is humbling to see how much engagement that we get with people. It's like, you know, they'll see 73rd Hole on the hat that I wear out. They say, oh, 73rd Hole podcast. I've been wearing it at the gym, and people will talk to me about it, which is absolutely crazy. Or you'll be walking, people at golf courses that have told me about it. So it really is insane, and it is humbling is what it is. So could not be more appreciative of everything. Hopefully we can keep doing a great job and producing good content for everyone out there, because it's a lot of fun, Sam, but at the end of the day, it is a lot of homework that we do to make sure that we can provide some great golf content. And when I know I made it officially, Sam, is whenever I was in my classroom the other day and I heard our fabulous intro come on one of my kids' laptops. That is when I knew that I had reached the pinnacle of stardom.
That's right. When you can get a seventh grader to think his teacher is cool, you've made it, T-Dub. You made it. Good stuff today, T-Dub. Woody will be back next week. My dad and myself, my dad, the Hump Man, Craig Humphreys, one last time on his Masters recap / RBC preview tomorrow, filling in for T-Dub on the radio show on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal. That comes up at 7 o'clock Central Time tomorrow. If you're in the Oklahoma City area, we'll also post that radio show on the podcast as well. If you're not following us on social media, definitely go ahead and do that at the 73rd Hole on X and at 73rd Hole on Instagram. And definitely hit that follow button on Apple Podcasts. It's absolutely free. It'll just help us out and give you a notification whenever we drop a new episode like this one. One final time, thanks, T-Dub. This has been Sam Humphreys on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole podcast.